Almost time to meet our opinionista for this morning, but first, here's a little of these stories so far. Remember how phone hacking left Rupert Murdoch feeling humble.
This is the most humble day of my life.
Now, this week we saw allegations from both the BBC and the Australian Financial Review of a convoluted saga to hack and bring down various of News Corporation's pay TV rivals. Allegations that detailed a supposed scheme so Byzantine, of such complex, fiendish grandeur, you almost expect the next revelation to be that Rupert Murdoch ceded control of his empire at some point in the mid-90s to Ernst Stavro Blofeld and Spectre.
James Bond, allow me to introduce myself. I am Ernst Stavro Blofeld.
But no, Rupert Murdoch is still every inch the man in charge, and he's done with humble. This time he's mad. He gave us all fair warning via his new medium of choice, Twitter. Because when you're the most near-to-omnipotent media magnate the world has seen since Rosebud was a sled, what else would you do if you wanted to let the world know you're mad as hell and just not going to take it anymore? The options are limitless. You could have a series of angry threats mouthed by Lisa Simpson. Give Fox News producers a 280-page script to be read in a continuous 24-hour cycle by Sean Hannity. Or give over the entirety of the next issue of the London Sun to a series of angry expletives. Or you could just tweet something haltingly inarticulate from your iPad.
Seems every competitor and enemy piling on with lies and libels. So bad, easy to hit back hard, which preparing.
Twitter it was, and Mr. Murdoch's 210,010 followers watched with eager interest as war was declared. That first tweet was at 14:50 Thursday New York time. By 14:58, Rupert was still fuming, though he seemed no closer to recovering the use of several key parts of speech.
Enemies, many different agendas, but worst, old toffs and right-wingers who still want last century's status quo with their monopolies.
It was at this point, with Rupert railing against old toffs and right-wingers, that a small tsunami of ironic bemusement ran round the Twitter sphere. But at Rupert Murdoch wasn't done. Mental images formed of the mogul lost in thought, pacing by the piranha pool in his secret subterranean headquarters. By 15:03, he seemed resolved.
Let's have it on. Choice, freedom of thought and markets, individual personal responsibility.
Blow winds and crack your cheeks. Rupert would have his revenge through stream of consciousness. Elsewhere, full sentences, some even containing prepositions and conjunctions, were being deployed in both defence and attack. The Australian Financial Review was holding its ground. The paper's investigation, it editorialised,
shines a public interest spotlight on the murky internal workings of a part of News Corporation, one of Australia's largest and most successful global companies.
By week's end, the local Murdoch flagship had spent several days witch-preparing, and yesterday the Australian editorialised at full throttle.
The eagerness of News Limited's rivals to leap on the AFR stories shows facts are optional in their campaign against Mr. Murdoch.
It argued that the AFR's motives were clear.
The only possible conclusion from this tawdry episode is that Fairfax has been using its financial daily to damage its chief rival.
Battle has been joined, and we mere spectators can only watch with awe and dread at the terrible rutting and clattering of antlers before us. The full detail is dense and mysterious, all but impenetrable to most of us. The allegations are serious, but the defence is spirited and laced with profound affront, flecked with anger. News Corp and Rupert are mad this time, no doubt about it. There is a whiff of endgame in the air. As Rupert himself tweeted on Friday,
proof you can't trust anything in Australian Fairfax papers unless you are just another crazy.
Now, no lieutenant has been more loyal in his blunt denunciations of what the AFR has written than editor-in-chief of news.com.au, David Pemberthy.
There is a massive story going on in Australia at the moment. By massive, I mean massive in terms of the amount of space thrown at it. Massive in the level of journalistic indulgence it displays, massively packed with distortions and sleights of hand, a massive pile of rubbish.
He joins us now from Adelaide. Mr. Pemberthy, good morning.
Hey, Jonathan, how are you?
I take it you're unimpressed by the AFR's work.
Look, I am unimpressed by it, and I heard all of your preamble. I think the best word you used at the very start was convoluted, and just a declaration up front. I'm not a financial journo. I'm not even a voracious reader of the business pages, be they the Fin Review, the Australian, or the Financial Times. My background is in the sort of populist mainstream of our company, places like The Telegraph in Sydney and obviously now News.com. Mm. But I just think that if you're going to go as hard as the Financial Review did, and you know, I made the point in my article that this is the newspaper that ran two pages in its initial coverage of September 11 but managed to set aside seven pages for this, six pages on the second day, and as a reporter from The Age noted on Twitter, there were more quotes from the editor justifying this expose than there were from the police or anybody involved with the case. You know, it is extremely convoluted. It's hard to work out the logic of these allegations as well, because, you know, from my reading of it, this data company that we used to part own a very, very long time ago.
Yep.
It's actually got a vested interest in stopping TV piracy, not actually creating it, because if TV pirates get their way and people can illegally hack into pay television, subscription television channels, then their revenue stream will dry up.
But they want to dry up the revenue stream, allegedly, of News Corp's opponents rather than News Corp itself. So there's a channelling of that
that's the allegation,
expertise, isn't there?
I mean, you could hear the clutch slipping pretty quickly with this story. And the most obvious sort of rebuff that it had, I thought, was... And you know, I'm talking about the... Because I work in Australia, you know, and I think that there's a pretty significant and obvious difference between News Limited and News International. And I'm not coming on here to make light of any of the stuff that has not just been alleged, but in some cases proven in the UK.
Yep.
Because people in the Australian arm of the business have been beyond troubled by some of the stuff that has happened there. But, you know, I mean, if they're talking about this being some attempt by our former subsidiary company to destroy Austar so that we could then buy it, I think, 13 years later, the problem with that is that the chief executive of Austar, who has actually been there since it started, I think, in 1985, he came out and said that the whole thing's rubbish. So if the bloke is meant to be... whose company is meant to have been the victim of this, is on the record saying none of it's actually true, none of it ever happened, then I think that the problem that the Fin Review has, and I don't want to have a crack at its editor, because I think he just,
one of your former colleagues?
Well, yeah, he is, and that's not why I'm sticking up for him. I mean, editing's never a pleasant experience, and sometimes stories do take on a life of their own. But I think that this does look like a massive attempt to make the Australian arm of the business suffer some collateral damage for the embarrassment which in a lot of cases we are deservedly suffering.
David, thank you. We've got to go with the news. Coming
up, Jonathan.
David Pimberthy there.